You remember the study that we did in the CLGB, it was number 8541, mm-hmm. in which we randomized patients with three different doses of chemotherapy, and particularly to Adriamycin. That was CAF in that particular program. And we looked at the results in the patients who were HER2 positive and HER2 negative. And we saw an effect in the patients who overexpressed HER2. Now, we then drew a hypothesis, a lot of people drew conclusions, that Adria was more effective in HER2 positive patients. Or you could turn that around and say that non-Adria regimens were not very effective in HER2 positive patients and you needed something like Adria. Well, those things still are hypothetical. They certainly have driven practice. But it is also possible that we're really looking at the same phenomena, that is high risk and low risk, and that in patients with a low risk, there wasn't much effective chemotherapy. And in fact, that was one of the interpretations that we made at the time. We discussed that as a possible interpretation of those data.
Because there wasn't a control arm also.
That's right. So you couldn't answer the question as definitively as if there had been a control arm. You're absolutely correct. But the thing we sometimes forget is that when we look at something like HER2 positivity, we're not looking at a single phenomenon. A tumor cell that overexpresses HER2 probably has many other mutations as well. When you're looking at HER2, there are probably more than one signal transduction pathway, more than one point in the cell that is abnormal. And so we may link it to HER2, but it may not be very specific. It may be another one or two or three factors that are the critical factors. The other point that I was going to make is that when we talk about HER2 overexpressors, we have until very recently thought of them as a very homogeneous group. But as you see at this meeting, and we're seeing more and more, it's really a very heterogeneous group. So that there are many things that happen beyond that HER2 signal. And so that, for example, in some cells, there will be a mutation of the AKT pathway. So that AKT is turned on. Well, if AKT is turned on, and if HER2 signals through AKT, then it doesn't do any good to inhibit AKT with Herceptin, right? So we generalize even about the HER2 group and assume that they're all one group, and they're not. So we're talking about pretty complicated phenomenon, and we're taking one endpoint, in this case high risk versus low risk, in the earlier group, Adria interacting with HER2 status, and we're drawing pretty broad conclusions, which are probably not justified by our current knowledge.
Well, the other thing that's kind of striking about this is that it sort of goes against the concept of relative risk reduction. You know, that idea that you identify what the therapy is, what kind of relative risk reduction occurs, and then just apply it to a high-risk and low-risk patient. In this situation, it didn't seem to apply.
Your point is a good one, and it's an important one. But we have always had this tendency to oversimplify. For example, when we brought in adjuvant systemic therapy, chemotherapy, we assumed that applied to everybody. And we would have this debate between adjuvant systemic therapy and local therapy, that is, mastectomy. And the argument was made that the disease metastasizes very early and we have to treat all patients and so on and on and on. And in fact, we've always known it's a heterogeneous disease. And it's almost certain that there are some patients in there that, in fact, have a disease that hasn't metastasized, or I think even more interesting is that it's pretty clear that you can metastasize, and that is not necessarily a fatal event. I was just talking with Trevor Poles just a little while ago. I was looking at his poster on the bisphosphonates. And he was commenting in a way that I think very few people do, in which he was talking about when you find evidence of breast cancer metastases in the bone marrow, half of those metastases never prove to have any clinical importance. That is, half of those metastases never seem to grow out, never seem to spread to other areas of the body. We place so much emphasis on the high-risk group, on the fact that half of them do, and therefore at a higher risk, and therefore we can give them more treatment. We fail to pay attention to the more interesting phenomenon that there's a fairly large group of patients out there that even when they have metastatic disease, it's not very virulent. And we're now getting molecular tools, I think, that are going to allow us to really tease this out, begin to define groups more precisely. But we're still, I presume, decades away. Sometimes I predicted decades in the past and it's proved to be years, so we'll see in this one.